road project. We're a developer community site worldwide. And I've spent the last probably over a decade working in the developer tools market. I was editor of Visual Basic Programmers Journal and then moved into the role of publisher on Visual Studio Magazine before I worked with the Code Project. Almost my entire professional career, I've had something to do with development, but at the beginning of my professional career, that was more of macro development than professional development. So then again, with Visual Basic, it's been about 12 years, Visual Basic and Visual Studio thereafter. I mean, I don't know how old I look, but I'm not old enough that I was actually doing anything serious with software development in the 70s, but when I was in high school, I had the opportunity to take some, you know, release time classes, and you could take community college classes, and I thought, well, you know, computers are nifty, so I'll go see if I'm settled, if I can be a computer programmer, and I took Pascal and Fortran, and turns out I'm not really suited to be a computer programmer, but it meant that I could at least understand the basic concepts and understood a lot of that basic stuff. And it also got me out of school at noon, so it was worth it. When you talk about the early days of computers, I mean, we're not talking about the early days, you know, where you had a room full of computers. I mean, even I'm not that old, although I can remember going and working on some minis at my dad's work. But the early days of personal computers, there was just, you know, BASIC was really your only option. You were still working with things in a text editor. And one of the most interesting things about Visual Basic 1.0, and I actually used this before I was involved with the Microsoft community, was that you could actually sort of draw pictures to describe what you wanted done, or you could just kind of draw what you wanted on the screen and the code would magically sort of be in the back and then you could hook it together how you wanted. So it was, at the time, it was called visual programming. And that term's sort of fallen out of favor, but ultimately that was the neat part about it, is you sort of said, I want my program to look like this on the screen. I want my program to, you know, I want the box to look like this. When someone fills in their name and their address, it should look like this. And then you could build the code behind it. And that's ultimately what has spawned all of Visual Studio and all the other stuff, was that ease of use. And then ironically, it's turned around now where a lot of the up-and-coming languages or tools are really things that let you just get right into the code, fix the code how you want, and be in and out just by typing it in. Before Visual Basic, it was a lot harder to write these things simply because you had to have really good computer science skills. That's what Visual Basic did, is it sort of democratized development. So you didn't have to have a CS degree necessarily. And in fact, most of the Visual Basic programmers did not have CS degrees. They were business people trying to solve a problem, or they were people who were just, you know, inclined that way, that knew that they could do this and were excited by the tool and tried to solve the problems or solve the business problem that way. That was really what Visual Basic introduced, was the opportunity to take it from the CS arena, from this place where it seemed like you should wear a white lab coat and you should have all this training. You should be able to code these things and do things during a very strict methodology. It made it so you could say, look, I've got a business problem that I need to have solved, and look, this tool's simple enough that I can solve it. Java didn't come around until much later. I mean, Visual Basic was 91, right? And Java didn't really kick in until the late 90s. So in terms of what were Visual Basic's competitors, I mean, you know, Delphi was around then, Clipper, there were a lot of sort of, you know, in that rough time frame, there were a lot of similar competitors. But Visual Basic caught on the most simply because, I think, Visual Basic caught on because it came along at the right time to build Windows applications. And I'm not sure it was the synchronization of a Windows release and a Visual Basic release. I mean, we could probably talk for a long time about maybe inability to completely coordinate the release of Visual Basic or Visual Studio or other tools with a Windows release, because in some cases it's been moderately embarrassing. But I think I think just the fact that Windows came along, Windows got some excitement. There's a lot of market momentum behind it, and Visual Basic being the tool to use to build Windows applications. And after that, the rest of the Visual Studio suite, I think, is really what drove Visual Basic's success. Developing an application for Windows involved C++ skills, it involved knowledge of the APIs, it involved a lot of really complex programming techniques. And like I've often said, I think the big advantage to Visual Basic was it gave you the ability to program for Windows, understanding what you wanted the user experience to be like and what the business problem was that needed to be solved, without having to think so much about how it happened. You were able to just think of what the problem was you needed to be solved. Visual Basic 1.0 had a lot of challenges. I mean, I was not involved in the actual marketing or the community around Visual Basic, but I was actually a consumer in a company that was trying to build something using Visual Basic. Because at the time, we wanted something that would work with both DOS and Windows. And of course, it's been so long now, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast, but it's been so long since we did that, I can't remember what the drawbacks were. It wasn't perfect, but it's like Alan Cooper uses an analogy in a lot of the things he does. And Alan's one of the ones that brought the original concept for Visual Basic to Microsoft. And he makes a good point that's really, I think, the value of Visual Basic, and that is it's not so much that the bear dances well, it's that the bear dances at all. And I think that's ultimately it. It's like you're not going to that and saying, gosh, this is so perfect. This is dropped fully formed from the heavens. It's the most perfect program ever. It's like, look, it made something that was really, really painful less painful. I mean, it might not be perfect, but it's still, making my life better. By having this product or this tool, and that really applies to Visual Basic 1.0 all the way through Visual Studio 2010, ultimately, it's not perfect, and it's never going to be perfect because it's software. And developers are a notoriously demanding audience. But, are you making their life suck a little bit less? Yes, then you've succeeded. It's interesting. I posed the question in sort of an open forum at the Code Project last week, and I said, listen, I'm going to go up and I'm going to talk to Microsoft about some of these newest versions of Visual Studio. What do you think? And, I can go through details. I mean, literally, I tried to compress the printout and still had 30 pages, but they had a lot of feedback, and ultimately, their lives are better as a result of doing it. They're never, ever going to be satisfied. And because software needs to be released, you can't wait until it's perfect. So, there are problems with every version of Visual Studio. But I think, by and large, it has made developers' lives easier. When Visual Studio originally came out, I mean, this was a really interesting transitional time because what you had was you had a couple of products that were sort of at their peak. I mean, they were widely described as probably the most perfect that languages or tools ever really got. VB6 was widely loved and accepted. It was used in millions of applications by millions of developers. C++ 6.0 is widely considered to be sort of the best of all the C++ versions that have been done. I mean, improvements have been attempted, but everybody seems to love that. That was the best season of the TV series, right? It's like they've been pretty good, but they've never been as good as that. So you had those, and what happened with the first version of Visual Studio was it wasn't so much an integrated package as it was sort of a, here's all the different products we offer, and we're going to duct tape them together and stick them in a box, and you're going to get this box all together at a discount. And that applies, the enterprise guys are happy because now I can buy one license and all my developers can have it, whether they're using three of the six tools or whatever. Doesn't matter if they're using it all, my licensing is easier. And it wasn't until later versions, the .NET, quote-unquote .NET versions, that the integration in the IDE became more consistent. But the initial versions were really, they were a great idea. It was around the time that you weren't buying Microsoft Word separately anymore, right? You were buying Microsoft Office. And the same thing with Visual Studio. I'm going to buy the suite of tools, whether I use them all or not, and it's easier to just buy them all in one package. It was more of a marketing package than a technology package. I mean, I think the developer community responded to Visual Studio in the way that you would expect them to. They were saying, why is Microsoft forcing me to do this kind of thing? And that's the response anytime Microsoft changes anything, is why is Microsoft forcing me to do this thing? Why is Microsoft forcing me to make this change? Why is Microsoft forcing me to play well with others by creating Team System? Why is Microsoft taking my beloved product and moving it forward? Why is Microsoft getting rid of Fox Pro? I love Fox Pro. It's like, well, because Microsoft is a business and they need to move the business forward. But the development community is remarkably consistent in their response, which is, don't change that. It's perfect. The developers are never happier with a version of Visual Studio until it's superseded. And then the new version becomes the object of their hate as opposed to the previous version. And one of the things I was thinking about as we prepared for this was, it's easy to stereotype developers, and heaven knows they joke about it as much as anybody else does, and it's easy to stereotype them as being sort of the prototypical geek and nerd, but ultimately what they are is they're very demanding craftsmen in a lot of ways. They don't suffer idiots well. And I'm sure we've all ridden in the car with some with a driver who doesn't suffer idiots well. They're very similar to that in their professional career. They want the tool to get out of their way so that they can execute what's in their mind and be done with it. And in most cases, so then they can go home because they've done their job, right? I mean, ultimately, most developers, the vast majority of developers, are professional people. I mean, they could be woodworkers, they could be plumbers, they could be whatever. In this society, in this decade, in this century, they're software developers. But ultimately, they just want to go home to their families and have a normal life. And there's those that are dedicated and go home and program more software. But ultimately, and this is a really important point, I think, ultimately what Visual Basic, Visual Studio, all these other things have done is made it easy for a lot of people to have careers. I mean, it's really built a lot of livelihoods. And that's why these people feel so passionately about it, because it's so related to their livelihood. This is the thing that I think is overlooked a lot when you look at the history of what Microsoft's developer tools have done. I mean, you know, the rise of Windows, dominance of Windows, well documented. Microsoft's developer tools, loved and hated, but still, you know, really great products over the course of time. On aggregate, great, great products. But the thing that I think is often overlooked is that Microsoft and really the people involved in the developer tools team did some really smart things early on. The first thing I think they realized was that if they did things right, they could create a tool that magnified the efforts that Microsoft could do in terms of developing for Windows. They understood that the thing that was going to make Windows popular, that was going to drive acceptance, was going to drive adoption, was really neat things that happened in Windows. And the same thing, I think you can see that parallel in the internet. What drove the widespread adoption of the internet? Well, it's because I can do cool things on it. But I think Microsoft's dominance in development tool space tied to Windows was really wrapped around making it easy for people to build applications to make Windows successful. Now, there's a couple other aspects to that that I think are important. One of the things that they did a good job of was they realized that they needed community around these products. There was no way that Microsoft could provide all of the support that was needed. I mean, MSDN today provides a lot of support and has easily the industry-leading support structure for developer tools. But there's also a very vibrant community around it. And of course, I'm part of that and have been part of that, whether it's been with the Visual Studio magazine or Visual Basic Programmers Journal, or now with the Code Project. I mean, we've got 3.5 million unique developers coming to our site every month. I mean, that's a really significant portion of the worldwide developer base, just because it's helpful for them to come together to solve their solutions professionally. Microsoft's continued encouragement of community, I think, has helped with the strength in that area. And the third thing I wanted to mention is the other thing that they did a really good job of, and they continue to try to do well, is support of the third-party community. And the best analogy here is that, you know, what Microsoft did with Visual Basic and Visual Studio is they opened up a Home Depot a block from your house and enabled you to build your own shed, which was awesome. Because before, you had to hire someone to come and grow the trees for you and then turn them into lumber and then build it for you. But now there's a Home Depot. Well, now the greatest part now is that not only can I go into that Home Depot, but if I don't want to try and figure out how to build, you know, the wall to my shed, I can buy a prefabricated wall. And that's sort of the analogy with a lot of these tools that are available for Visual Studio and Visual Basic. I don't have to code a lot of things by hand. There are pieces I can just drop in that are already made. And the value proposition is they're already tested, I know they work, there's support there, and it's saving me a lot of time. And as it's evolved, they've gone from just pieces I can drop in my application to things to help my workflow better, right? It's things that'll help me test things better, things that'll help me keep track of bugs, help my team work together better. I've heard the argument that being able to prefabricate applications with a lot of off-the-shelf pieces can stifle creativity. And if I can continue to beat to death my Home Depot metaphor, I think that can be the case. I mean, if you just want to build something that just looks like everything else, you just want to take the pieces off the shelf and build it just to get the job done, that's perfectly acceptable. But I know there's plenty of creativity available. If you look at the wide range of sheds up and down the street, I mean, we all shop at the same Home Depot, but there's a lot of people build them differently. One guy might want a big purple door. Another guy might want a second story. Maybe another set of neighbors wants window boxes. I mean, you can do them all differently. But the nice thing is you're spending your time on figuring out what's my business logic, how can I differentiate myself from a business perspective where it's important, and not trying to figure out, wait, How is it that, you know, how do I nail 2x4s together again? I know I'm mixing my metaphors in and out slightly, but that's really it. I mean, what all these tools enable you to do is spend less time working on what's inside and more time on the things that are important to the business. I think there's still some mystique and glamour to the old school guy that sits in the basement and hammers out his code and emerges with something full blown, and that certainly still happens today. But, you know, like I was saying, I think that's a small minority of the developer audience. I mean, I think developers admire that and respect that, but it's not very practical in terms of how most developers work. I think, again, ultimately most developers are trying to get the job done, and particularly today, and increasingly so over the past years, it didn't just barely happen, but these guys are asked to do increasingly complex applications with increasingly smaller teams, and those smaller teams are distributed globally. So the complexity of what they're trying to get done is so much greater that there's really no way some guy sitting in his basement could do it. I mean, some guy sitting in his basement could come up with something like, say, I don't know, Twitter, right? But he's not going to be able to figure out how to do Citibank's currency trading applications. I cannot remember the details of a lot of that lawsuit around the Java and the J++ mm-hmm. stuff. It was a well-regarded product that was unfortunately had to be cut short. I know that the virtual machine was well-regarded. You know, I think it had some market momentum. It's too bad that the lawsuit had to derail that. But ultimately, I think time has shown that I don't think it was necessarily core to where Microsoft was going with the suite, and I really don't think that it's been core to the overall market. I mean, I think Java is important, but market share has not really shown that Java has been the Microsoft or Windows killer that we perhaps expected it would be. For a long time, Java was really, really feared. I think it was the competitor that could really be a challenge, and it's still very strong in the enterprise and in mobile and has a lot of applications. But rather than being the, I think the problem was early on with Java, it was touted as being more than it really ended up being. I mean, it would have been great if Java could really have been the write once, run anywhere, but really it just, I think it ended up being write once and recompile and rewrite for all these different distribution mechanisms. So it really didn't fulfill its promise, but it still remains a significant force in the market, just not as dangerous as it might have initially seemed. Java's owned by Sun, and I guess now soon Oracle. And it's an open standard that's ironically owned by one company, so it's sort of confusing. And I'm not really sure that for the purposes of this, we need to get into the complexity of the Java itself. But Eclipse is important, because if you're going to talk about what are the threats to Visual Studio, Eclipse is really the strongest threat to Visual Studio as a development tool, as a suite of products. It's really the only competitive IDE that really forms any kind of a threat. There's a lot of plugins for it. It's controlled by the community. There's industry support for it. And there's a lot of tools that are available for it. But it has the same challenges that Linux has, meaning there's not a lot of commercial support for it. It's hard for an enterprise to buy into it in a lot of cases, and because there's no standardized distribution, no standardized tool set. No, it's still important and it's still a great threat, but one of the things that Microsoft has done right and well with Visual Studio is there's a level of security that an enterprise customer buys into by buying Visual Studio, because they know the company's going to be there. There's support and an infrastructure and a consulting arm and a whole bunch of pieces around them to help them feel comfortable when they shell out that kind of money. You know, in all of the responses I've gotten most recently about Visual Studio, I haven't heard a lot of people complaining about the expense. But then again, there's a whole bunch of different SKUs or different editions of Visual Studio. I mean, really, if you just want to program something simply, there's some Express, the free versions, that are pretty neat. There's a lot of stuff in there, and they're free. Standard or Professional are not that expensive. You get up in the Visual Studio Team System level, those are pretty expensive. But you're also getting a lot more with that. Now, I'm not qualified to say whether the price point is right. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of smart people that determine those price points, and a lot of them I know personally, so rather than have them take me around back to the visitor center and give me a whooping, I don't really know whether they're too expensive or whether they're priced right. But I think what Microsoft has tried to do is price things appropriately to the market. So if there are complaints that say Visual Studio Team System is too expensive, maybe they're not the target audience for that product. I'm not sure that free tools are necessarily a huge threat to Visual Studio's business model. Again, my understanding of the Visual Studio business model is simply that it needs to not be a huge cost center. I mean, and I know it's profitable, but there's really no agenda to make it as profitable as Windows, right? Its job is to, coming back to the original reason Visual Basic existed, was let's make it easy to develop applications for Windows. And now it's a little more complex than that. It's like, let's make Visual Studio the easiest way for people to build and deploy applications using Microsoft products and platforms. And given that, the free tools are not going to be able to compete with that. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in free tools. There's a lot of good free tools that are available. But it comes back to looking at Eclipse and some of these other things. When you spend money on a product, there's a level of support and trust and confidence there that you know you're going to get. You know, for at least the life cycle of the product, you're going to go ahead and have that ability. I think with Visual Studio, the perception is that your investment is safe. I think that's part of the value proposition of buying anything from a large software company. When we're talking about third-party tools and integration with Microsoft's Visual Studio, I think there's some interesting points that are raised with that. First, I think the perception can be that Microsoft's an evil empire, just this monolith. It's been difficult for me to have that perception over the years because my interaction with Microsoft is rarely with the corporate entity. It's with individuals who are motivated to do a great job with their area of responsibility. And the third-party tools have been part of that. I think, you know, I've dealt with a long string of people who are trying to do their best to help the partners be successful as they're trying to build a business around Visual Studio. And it's always a balance because Microsoft will always, I mean, we can guarantee it, Microsoft will always take the best of what's in the market for future versions. It's just going to happen. I mean, it's because someone has, you know, seen a business opportunity in the market and they've said, well, Microsoft doesn't do this very well, so I'm going to build a product around that. Well, that product's going to have a finite life cycle, so the next version of Visual Studio, it's probably going to get fixed. But I think, again, to Microsoft's credit, they have tried to the best of their ability to make it so that people can build businesses around this. There's been a fairly vibrant third-party community, and again, it's expanded and contracted over the years as opportunities have and the markets have come and gone, but there's a vibrant third-party community around things that will work with Visual Studio. And again, to Microsoft's credit, even though I think it's still an ongoing challenge, they've tried to say, all right, well, throwing stuff in basic applications is great, but we need to make sure that developers in general understand what an application lifecycle is like. So we're going to build Visual Studio Team System, and that does sort of three important things. First, it gives us a higher priced SKU so we can make more money, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. You know, we've got an enterprise sale, we've got a high priced product. We can make some really good money here, and it's panned out, and it's been greatly successful for them. Second, what that does when Microsoft spends that amount of money on that kind of product is it raises the level of conversation. So it's just tying into my third point a little bit. It's also making it so these people who had application lifecycle management tools, whether they were reporting or bug tracking or debuggers or whatever, it makes it so that these guys, when they go in to do a sale, they don't have to explain to people what application lifecycle management is and then tell them how their product fits in. Well, guess what? Microsoft's already made it so that people understand what application lifecycle management is. They've spent millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to make sure that people comprehend that. So it's made it easier in a lot of ways for the wider industry to have products that plug into that because Microsoft has taken the time to develop the industry to a point that developers' minds don't have to learn two things in order to want to buy something. In other words, they've helped shorten the buying cycle by making the story shorter. Oh, the value proposition is much easier. I understand why I'd want to do source code control now, as opposed to, backing it up onto a CD every night, that's not source code control. You know, trying to help people understand that that's the, you know, what source control is, and now they don't have to understand why they'd want it. Now they can actually compare relative merits of the various products. Microsoft never really directly supports, or rarely directly supports, a third-party tool. I mean, they just try and build and the word we often use, and it's sort of a buzzword, is ecosystem. What it really means is all these things that I've talked about before. Microsoft has built a way for people to build applications in the Microsoft area. It used to be on Windows, and now it's Windows and servers and the internet and things like that, but they've made an easy way for you to do that. And there's lots of different places that developers can plug in, and Microsoft's done a really good job of trying to make information available to these companies, but these companies need to have a business model that can succeed with or without Microsoft's life support. And so if one of these companies can't survive, it may be market forces. It's just, I mean, again, I'm not trying to be callous about it. I'm just saying you can't build your business around hoping that Microsoft never comes in and either changes something that makes it so your business can't continue, or subsumes the capabilities that you are making up for, or the subsumes the inadequacies, or fixes the problems that your product solved. There's really no copyright on a good idea. I mean, for example, and let me just, I'm just going to be vague about this, and it's the best way to do it because I really can't think of a specific example, but if there's something that just doesn't work right, for example, in the latest versions of Visual Studio, there's been a lot of complaints about the WPF designer, which is basically, you know, just a forms designer for one of the new presentation technologies. There's a lot of complaints about that. So if I had a product today that was a better WPF forms designer, boy, I'd get that to market this minute, because hopefully Microsoft will fix that problem in the next version of Visual Studio. In other words, solving these problems is a great solution. I mean, it's a great business strategy, but you can't expect that Microsoft's not going to solve the problem or solve the inadequacy in future versions. So yeah, I mean, there's certainly some intellectual property issues involved there, but I'm confident that Microsoft's legal team is well acquainted with how to deal with those. I asked the question, again, on one of the Code Project discussion boards, just in general. I mean, I can give you sort of a general thought about Visual Studio 2005, Visual Studio 2008, and hopefully what's coming in 10, is very interesting to sort of get some aggregate responses. I mean, I didn't take a survey necessarily, but I just sort of asked for some general conversational responses. And from the surveys that I've taken, I know that about 63% of the people coming to the Code Project are excited to see Visual Studio 2010. I mean, they're looking forward to it. They're hoping to move to it. That said, as we've discussed before, nobody's ever satisfied, and none of these products are ever perfect, but nobody's ever quite satisfied. I think Visual Studio 2005 was relatively well received. Visual Studio 2008 was also well received. They fixed a lot of good things, but there were a lot of problems that got introduced, and one of the biggest complaints I heard was performance-related issues. So I think everybody's hoping that in Visual Studio 2010, they're going to solve that problem. The examples I have of performance-related issues, I mean, I could go into in depth. I mean, one of them may be, well, just off the top of my head, the WPF designer was one of them. It seemed to, many people reported having really hard time with more complex projects. Now, some of these complaints are very similar to what you hear across the board with any new versions of any software. It's like, well, I have, you know, I got Windows Vista and I upgraded it on my computer and now it doesn't run as fast. Well, you're still running the same old computer. And I'm not saying that's good or bad, but, you know, you're sort of not using the ideal environment to run this software. Now, to sort of digress briefly, you know, that's where Windows 7, everyone's been so excited about Windows 7, is because suddenly they're saying, hey, look, this is going to be great, and it runs on a wide variety of hardware. And that's the challenge with Visual Studio is, okay, well, I'm trying to open a complex project. Well, it ran really well on Visual Studio 2005, but now I'm running it on the same computer in Visual Studio 2008. I haven't upgraded my computer, and it's choking. It's like, well, maybe, you know, part of the upgrade process needed to be increased computing power. I think it'd be difficult and maybe not the best venue to talk about what the specific areas are that people complain about in Visual Studio. Now, don't get me wrong, I mean, I'm going to communicate that to the team so they all hear it, but I think one of the biggest challenges for both Microsoft and for the developers that use Visual Studio is trying to avoid the, you know, did anyone ever look at this before it went out the door problem. And you hear a lot of that in a lot of different areas, whether it's the help system, which has been soundly reviled, I think, probably since the dawn of time. I mean, I suspect that the manual that came with the wheel was probably, you know, beaten to death with a club because it wasn't adequate, right? I mean, there's just, the help system has never been, no one's ever been happy with this, and people have always wondered if, you know, if anybody ever looks at that kind of thing. And there's other pieces like that that people wonder, have they ever been tested? And it makes you wonder, I mean, what are the use cases? I think, for the first, say, 10 years of Visual Basic and Visual Studio, up in, let's say, till around the turn of the century, makes me sound older when I say the turn of the century, up to around the turn of the century, I think the use cases were really clear, and it was easier to sort of define who those were. I know that the development team has gone through trying to define the use cases. I mean, I know there's rigorous methodologies, and people are really trying hard, but ultimately, development has become so complex that trying to get a handle on these use cases has become so difficult that it almost seems like there's a lot of complaints that the tools are not really helping anybody because they're for everybody. And I think that's where a lot of specialized sort of the tools that have become really popular, sort of these small, easy, simple things are. It's like, well, guess what? You can program all kinds of quick stuff using some of the free internet applications, some of the new technologies, but they also don't have the rigorousness that a really robust application needs to have, and that's sort of what Visual Studio gives you the ability to do. Now, that said, it's not like an early Visual Basic where you can just build an app in an hour, right? It's much more complex than that, and it's sort of made it, it's one of the challenges that I know they're continuing to deal with, and it's one of the complaints you hear a lot, is it's just, it's too complex, it's too difficult to get a handle on, and there's too much going on. And again, maybe this product isn't aimed at me. And I know that Microsoft's already heard this, but it's clearly a challenge. I mean, it's become so monolithic since the early days that it's a challenge to make it super valuable for every single developer. I think the thing that people tend to forget is that Microsoft is not a charity, it's a business. And so Microsoft needs to listen to its customers, but it also needs to listen to its most profitable customers. And here's a really good example of that. It was a very controversial decision to move from Visual Basic 6 to Visual Basic .NET. There were a lot of customers left behind on that transition, and it was a hard transition and a rough transition, and we could spend much longer than we have time in this conversation to talk about whether it was the right decision. And we can argue both ways. Regardless, it's water under the bridge. But it's one of those situations where if Microsoft had listened to its customers and listened to every one of them and tried to please all of them, they would never have been able to sort of just move ahead in the manner that they had. And so they had to leave some customers behind. And there were some customers, and believe me, I heard from them, the product team heard from them, and we heard from not only them in aggregate, but we heard from many of their most vocal complainers or vocal supporters personally. I mean, they, these are people we knew, right? And they were not pleased. The displeasure was made very plain. And Microsoft did listen. But ultimately, listening to the customers meant making the right decision for the business. So Microsoft does listen to its customers, and I think it does a really good job of doing it. And I think, again, we're sort of starting to say Microsoft as the monolith. But the individuals involved in building all the products within Visual Studio try really hard to listen to the customers and build the products around the customers' needs. I think, like any company, you can't please 100% of the customers, and you still have to drive your business needs and, sort of the design for the product around where it needs to go, not only what, one customer is telling you. The whole .NET transition was really, it was big, particularly with Visual Basic. I mean, today we look at it and, we see that, C# is sort of the dominant language. Well, at the time of the .NET transition, if we'll call it that, VB was the dominant language. I mean, it was 80% of the market. And when VB went from VB6 to VB.NET, it basically was a different language with the same name. I mean, the transition was so abrupt that what Microsoft said was, look, if you're upgrading from VB6, if you're trying to learn VB.NET from VB6, you might as well learn C# instead. We're not going to make it any harder for you, but in fact, most of the samples, it took probably a year or two for a lot of the samples that were in that product to even be available in VB.NET. So, Microsoft clearly encouraged you, if you were going to move to .NET, learn C#. And there were a lot of advantages to that, but that was a very difficult adjustment. And now, when I look at the numbers as to what people are using on the code project, for example, it's about 63-64% are using C#. And we have a slightly higher than average use of C++, but it's in the 30 range, and so is VB. You can ask if C# is going to become a universal language and VB is on its way out, but I think that's sort of already, we've already seen that through the trends. I think C# has been, whether officially or unofficially so, it's been encouraged to be the sort of official language of .NET, and I think it's the most widely adopted one. And I think when that decision was made, and again, we can argue whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision, but at the time, I think, given all the things on the table, the best decision was made, and that is, guys, guess what? It's time to move on from VB. There's enough limitations in this that we've got to move past. VB6 was great, but to take everything to the next level, it's got to move on. Microsoft wasn't the fastest moving onto the internet either, but I think the other advantages of .NET, and I think .NET is more of a marketing term than a descriptive term in a lot of ways. I mean, some of the advantages that that platform brought were, I've got an integrated IDE for all my work, right? It's not, as I've mentioned before, the duct tape box full of products. It's called Visual Studio. They're all integrated together, and there's a lot of advantages for both Microsoft and third-party developers. So as that vision evolved, it's one IDE with anything you can plug into it, C# or VB or whatever you want, J# or F# or any of these other open, you put plug anything you want in there. When I asked the question of Code Project visitors what they thought about Visual Studio 2010, I mean, I think there's cautious optimism. I mean, and I think it's been really interesting. I think Windows 7 has provided sort of a warm, fuzzy glow around the next generation of Microsoft products because people look at it and they go, oh, wait, they saw what they did wrong and they're trying to fix it. And Windows is such a big thing in all these guys' lives. I mean, you know, we talk about the internet, we talk about the importance of web-based apps, but ultimately in corporations and what we all do, we might not even realize it, but we're still using a lot of these smart client Windows-based apps. You ask people, they say, well, I don't use smart client apps. It's like, well, do you have an iPod? And they say, yeah. And I say, well, do you use iTunes? They say, yeah. It's like, well, it's really poorly executed. But that's a smart client app, right? I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible. I don't know what they're smoking, but it's still a smart client app. You could not manage that kind of stuff on the web. It would be a disaster. Coming back to my point, which I have wandered far afield from, Visual Studio 2010 is, I think, everyone's hoping that it's going to fix any of the lingering issues from 05 and 08. Plus, it's bringing some other capabilities I think people are looking forward to. But again, I mean, these guys, meaning developers, for the most part, they've sort of fallen into three camps. They fall into the anything Microsoft does is horrible, and I'm just not going to accept it, right? It doesn't matter what they do. They're not as smart as me. Therefore, it's going to fail, and we can sort of discount them. The second set, and I think it's the broadest set, are people who are working in the enterprise. So they're going to move to 2010 when their company does, which means not any sooner than 2010, probably more like 2011, right? So they're going to move to it, they're going to be excited to do it, but they sort of have to move when the company moves. And the third group are people who are really aware of of all these different versions. They are fully aware of the shortcomings and the advantages. And I think one of the commenters on the Code Project said it the best, and he said, whatever version I'm currently using is the one that I love the most and the one that I hate the most. And I think that's really what everybody's looking forward to, because again, you know, these are the tools they have in their hands. If I can use the craftsman analogy, they have these tools in their hands all day. So, they fit their hands, they feel comfortable with them, but they know exactly what the shortcomings are. They know exactly what they'd like to make better. But the buzz is sort of cautiously optimistic. I mean, I think everybody's kind of hoping that it all works out and that it goes the way it should. And if not, I think everybody feels there's always the 2.0. One of the things, and I haven't mentioned this before, one of the things that I did with my previous company was a conference that was alternately called VBITS and Visual Studio Live, much like, we evolved the magazine from a VB to a Visual Studio magazine. And we had a lot of events there, worked very closely with Microsoft at those events. And there were many where, a Microsoft employee would be dressed in a potentially anatomically embarrassing costume. They might be buying adult beverages for the entire group, and having a more freewheeling Q&A, and there's not quite as much of that as there used to be. Part of it's just the whole culture has evolved. I mean, again, we talked earlier about how in the early days there was sort of an excitement around, look, I can do this, I can build applications on Windows. There's some excitement here. We're all sort of forging the path ahead. Well, guess what? It's kind of the status quo now. I mean, there's sort of Microsoft's a little more corporate and Visual Studio's more corporate, and that's okay. It's just that the market has evolved. I mean, there's not as much of a place for that. I noticed at the upcoming TechEd, they've got a Geek Fest event. Well, back in the old days, that was always cheap, cheap beer, and they'd order in pizzas and, pull out whatever swag was left over from 7 years before in the closets. That's how I have I'm proud to own a Microsoft Bob sweatshirt from one of those events, but there's just not as much opportunity for that. I think it's more awkward to try and force fit it onto that because the market's sort of changed. It's a smaller community, but there's really been no substitute for the person-to-person thing. I mean, I think early on, yes, you're building it on one-on-one relationships, but that hasn't really changed. I mean, we're still, in the grand scheme of everything, the developer tools market is a subset of a subset, right? I mean, you've got the IT market, you've got the enterprise market, you've got or the development market, then you've got the tools market. I mean, ultimately, it's a fairly niche market. I mean, it's rare that someone like the person that runs the VSIP program, the partners program, is not at least acquainted, or someone on his small team of three or four is not at least acquainted with someone from every single partner. I mean, it's still really built on a how can we help you move your business ahead sort of relationship. But it's not quite as much of a let me show up at your door and try and encourage you to build something here because I desperately need to show the slide in my keynote that shows I have 20 partners, right? It's moved on from that. Now it's sort of a little bit more, what's the right word, regimented perhaps. But